Welcome to episode 147 of The Climate Champions. Check out past episodes on theclimatechampions.com. I'm Lee Krivat, host of The Climate Champions. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at krivatenergyinnovations.com. This week, my featured guest is Greg Hale, co-founder and principal at the Catskill Project, and senior advisor for energy efficiency markets and finance at NYSERDA. Greg is a former real estate lawyer, then co-owner of a real estate investment and development company based in Salt Lake City, then director of energy efficiency finance for the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, and now a prominent expert and advocate for high-performance carbon-neutral buildings. This podcast is being brought to you in part by the Department of Energy's Advanced Grid Research Group, whose purpose is to accelerate innovation in electric transmission and distribution technologies and create next-generation devices, software, and tools to help modernize the electric grid. The Climate Champions is also sponsored by the GridWise Alliance, uniting grid modernization experts from across the electricity industry. The GridWise Alliance promotes grid innovation for a decarbonized economy. To learn more, visit gridwise.org. The Catskill Project is a carbon-neutral passive house community under development in the Catskills, about 2 hours from Manhattan, and is the first community of its kind in the Northeast, if not the U.S. It's healthy, cool, with clean internal air and no drafts. Hopefully, it's the wave of the future on how new homes will be built. Oh, and it also has low energy costs and no emissions. Welcome to the Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat. I am here with Greg Hale, co-founder and principal at the Catskill Project and senior advisor for energy efficiency markets and finance at NYSERDA. Greg, welcome to the Climate Champions.
Thanks, Lee. Glad to be here.
When I was young, my parents had a cabin up at Gold Key Lake, which is actually in Milford, Pennsylvania, but we used to call it the Catskills, even though it wasn't. I thought it was a wonderful area of the country, and I'm sure it still is very wonderful.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there. We're in Sullivan County, pretty close to the Pennsylvania border. We're in the western side. Gorgeous landscape.
When it comes to climate change, what was your motivating moment? When did you first decide, I want to do something to help mitigate climate change?
It's been more of an evolution for me rather than, you know, a light switch going on. I've been an environmentalist. I trace it back to going to summer camp in the Adirondacks when I was a young teenager. And I've always had this strong feeling of environmentalism, which over the last 15 years or so, I've been able to merge into my work life. So as I've been doing that, it's become clearer and clearer that the prevailing predominant issue in environmentalism is the climate issue today. So it's been an evolution. If I needed to point to one specific event, I would say Hurricane Sandy, and primarily because that caused the Cuomo administration to hire Richard Kaufman as the quote unquote energy czar of New York State. We hadn't had one before and we haven't had one after. But then Richard asked me to come work with his team to really revamp the whole energy system in New York State. So that really got me involved into a position where I could have some impact on climate.
And what is your personal driver now for helping to mitigate climate change?
I think it's the preeminent issue of our time. The Earth will be fine, but is civilization going to be fine? We can be. We have the solutions if we can come to the will to deploy them. So I also think that it's really important, for me anyway, to have a sense of impact in the work that I do. It brings meaning to the work and the rest of my life.
I feel the same way. As long as I'm working and on this planet, let me put my time into something that matters.
Absolutely.
When you meet people that don't believe the facts or don't understand the facts around climate change, how do you try to convince them?
That's such a hard question. And it's so difficult that it has become such a political issue. You know, the Republicans used to be an environmental party. The Clean Air Act came through Richard Nixon's administration. Over time, it has become so polarized that a whole party, or most of a party, is debating the existence of this problem. Instead of everybody pulling together, this should be something that is really bipartisan, because our climate affects all of us. And if we all pulled together, we could fix it a lot easier. But how to do that? I think you point to the events happening all around us. It's really hard to deny that the Earth is warming when you've got all of the temperature records and the extreme weather events and the glaciers retreating at a rapid pace. It's frightening what we're seeing out there. I was here in New York City when the Canadian wildfire smoke settled on us for a couple of days, a couple of months ago. And that really brings it home when you can't see the building next door because of an entire country burning, but hundreds of miles away.
I landed in New York the last day of the extreme smoke, and I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I called my dad, he's 85 years old, and I asked him if he had ever, in his 85 years, because he was a lifelong New Yorker, seen anything like it. And he said, nothing. It's not like this is something that's happened before.
Right. Not in the East Coast. You know, folks in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and obviously Canada have lived with it for a long time now, increasing fire risk. And, fire is clearly a very scary element.
I was at San Diego Gas and Electric when wires between 2000 and 2010 designed to withstand 60 mile an hour winds, because everybody thought that's what it had to be constructed to withstand.
A lot of our infrastructure is not constructed to withstand the changing climate that we're in. That's one of the policy issues that we grapple with in New York State, is making sure that things that we're building today, we're not building them for today's climate, but that we're building them for the climate that's going to be here over the next few decades.
And it's hard to predict what that's exactly going to be and where.
Warmer. Warmer, able to withstand flash flooding seems to be the event, you know, and you never know where those are going to hit. They're very localized, but if they hit your spot, all of a sudden, you either need to have been prepared for it or you're digging out with a tremendous amount of damage.
But also drought, smoky skies in
sure.
regions, colder weather. It's going to be interesting to see how things change.
Yeah, flexibility is really the key.
So I'm so excited to learn more about the Catskill Project. Can you please get into the details?
Sure. So the Catskill Project's really the culmination of my working career. I graduated from law school in 1986, so I've been at work for almost 40 years now. The Catskill Project, we think, is the first of its kind in the northeastern United States, and its kind meaning a carbon neutral residential community. So what that means is it's going to be a 25 home community. We're building all of the homes to passive house standards so that they're, first of all, comfortable, healthy, low energy bills, but it's the low energy that helps in the carbon neutrality, right? So you have less energy required to heat and cool your house, and you can do that with a single heat pump. So it's passive house design. It's all electric. I happen to be a recovering lawyer myself, so I drafted the HOA documents, and there's no fossil fuels allowed to heat or cool your house, to heat your hot water, to dry your clothes, or to cook your food. Although probably a propane grill is okay. Essentially, we're saying it's going to be all electric, and we're going to have solar power so that the electricity you use is carbon free. So we have panels on roofs or accessory buildings or ground mounts wherever the shade dictates that you put the solar. We have battery options so that you can live off, survive off the grid for an extended period of time. And we also pay attention to the carbon that's in the materials that we use, the embodied carbon, right? It's not only operational carbon that the world needs to focus on. In fact, the embodied carbon has a, you know, it's a more immediate impact. It's carbon that is being spent to make the materials that you're using in your house and transporting and construction. So we choose those carefully. We use very little foam insulation. That's actually not a good embodied carbon material. So we use a dense pack cellulose, which is a plant-based material and actually sequesters carbon using that material for our insulation. For example, we limit the use of concrete. We have some that we need to use, but we also don't have steel. We've calculated the embodied carbon content of the model home that we built. We came up with an answer that it's under 10 years of sequestration by nature, the trees that are on site, that will sequester the amount of carbon that went into the materials. And operationally, we should be already carbon neutral. It's a driver for me for why I got into this project, but we're also trying to make it clear that it doesn't have to be the primary driver for a buyer. Right, these are beautiful houses in a great environment, and you're going to have low energy bills, so that's a great thing. But you don't have to be totally into the climate game to want one of these houses. We're handing you a carbon neutral, you know, a zero carbon footprint on a platter. Here you go. This is how you do it. But it doesn't need to be the preeminent focus of the development itself. If that makes any sense.
It reminds me of electric vehicles when I would say to people, yes, it is cleaner, it's better for the environment, it's part of climate change mitigation. But when you get behind the wheel and you fly
right
in that electric vehicle and you can on ramps very safely merge and have total control over speed and control of the car and not have to spend 10, 15 minutes every week having to pump gas and instead add fuel in your own garage.
Yep.
I mean, those are amazing reasons beyond climate change.
Yeah, and that's a great analogy to our houses. A passive house is just by definition more comfortable. You don't have drafts. It's about sealing the envelope and continuous insulation all around the living space, but then mechanical ventilation that makes sure you have a healthy indoor environment. But the temperature is the same if you're standing next to the window or across the room, and you're just not getting drafts, and it's a healthier indoor environment because you're not combusting any gas to cook your food or dry your clothes. And you have this ventilation system. We have merged with a MERV 13 filter to make sure that you are getting clean air in the house. Now, up in Livingston Manor, the air is generally pretty clean, but when we did have the Canadian wildfires, it was smoky out there, but inside the house, you couldn't actually smell the smoke.
That's great. I buy a whole bunch of those air filters in order to get the smoke smell out. Is each home a microgrid, or is the community a microgrid, or are you grid connected, or none of the above?
We are grid connected. The homes do not connect to each other in a energy sharing manner, but each home can really function off the grid. We had not installed solar panels yet. It was a year ago, January, when we decided we wanted to test the performance of the home, and we turned off the heating system for a week in January. And this was a cold week in January. I think it did dip below zero one of the nights and lots of single digits. The temperature in that house never went below 50 degrees for a week in, you know, single digit temperatures outdoors. And that's because a passive house is oriented so that you have solar gain through the windows. This is not solar PV from a rooftop panel, but it would essentially, the temperature would go down to about 50 or so at night. We have remote sensors, so we're watching all this. It would go down to about 50 degrees at night and then would recharge up to the high 50s through the solar heat gain, even though, you know, you get that effect even if it's cloudy outside. not as much, but you do get that effect. So when you think about that, and then you add the ability to have solar that works when the grid is down and a battery or two to store it, then you wind up in a situation where you could essentially just survive off grid in a fairly comfortable manner for an extended period of time.
So it is a microgrid. It can disconnect from the main grid when the main grid is down.
Yeah, the system in the house can support itself. That's correct. We have it set up so that you have two different electrical panels, one of which is serviced by the battery, and one of and those are the critical loads, like heating and cooling, your refrigerator, et cetera. And the other one is stuff that you can live without when the grid is down. So what that does is extend the period that your battery can charge and run those critical systems.
I'm working with a company that would allow an electric vehicle to run the house when the grid is down as well.
Yeah, we're very interested in that and focused on figuring out how to integrate that as well. I know that Schneider Electric has some systems that integrates that into some developments that they're doing out west.
If you had an electric vehicle, you'd basically have to rely on grid energy at that point, correct?
Not necessarily. Your solar and battery could be charging the electric vehicle.
I guess it depends on the size of the system you have.
That's exactly right. How many batteries do you want to put in? You know, if you want to be just totally off grid, then you probably need more batteries and a few more panels, but that could be managed as well. And so far, our buyers have been, they've gone for the full set of panels and a couple of batteries each. So they're very interested in being able to live this way.
Especially with what the future is starting to look like, I think.
True.
You talked about this role being a culmination of everything you've done in the past. So can you talk about that?
So as I mentioned, I was trained as a lawyer and worked for a major firm in their real estate department in New York and then in their office in LA for a bunch of years. And so really learned the real estate business, big picture real estate. And then I left there and started a real estate investment and management company that was based in Salt Lake City, Utah, where we're primarily focused on apartment properties. We are a medium-sized company, I'd say. We got to, at our height, had about 5,000 units, but also did some office and some hotel and a little bit of land development. So that was a lot of background in real estate. I then came back east, took a couple of years off, but then went back to work merging my environmental elements with the real estate by focusing on building retrofits. So I joined the Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, a major environmental NGO. They're focused on building retrofits. I was in a group called the Center for Market Innovation, trying to bring market-focused ideas and merge them with environmental ethics. So that got me into the environment plus real estate. And then, as I mentioned, when Hurricane Sandy hit and Richard Kaufman came to New York, I then joined his team of, I think we had five or six folks working on the energy transition in New York. And that work really has evolved from energy efficiency first and foremost to, you know, and reliability of the grid, to really focus on climate. And, you know, I'm proud of what New York State's accomplished so far with their legislation, their Climate Act, and everything I've been working on the building sector for how you actually take emissions out of the built environment. So then I had the good fortune, one of my colleagues at NRDC decided he wanted to pursue a real estate development up in this vicinity because he had a house up there. And so I joined him and we decided that we were going to first and foremost make this a carbon neutral community. So it's an opportunity to work with a few partners who are really impassioned about the same things that I am, but also allows me to bring my real estate experience and frankly, my legal training into bearing. You know, we all wear many hats on the Catskill project. And just to be clear, this is a separate endeavor from my work at NYSERDA. It's authorized and approved and through ethics, but I need to just be careful not to imply that this is an extension of NYSERDA proper, although it is certainly putting all of the principles that we go out and preach into practice.
Can you talk about setbacks you've had in your career?
I can talk about setbacks on this project in particular. We didn't understand how long things were going to take. All processes have taken at least twice as long as we had anticipated. Our spreadsheet from the beginning said we were going to be done by now. We're not done by now. So the subdivision process took a long time. The approval, you have to get an approval through the Attorney General's office when you're doing a homeowners association to make sure you're not selling swamp land and then fleeing the country. And all that took a long time. And then COVID hit. We forgot to plan for COVID.
How could you not plan for that? Come on, man.
I don't know. You know, we just had our head stuck in the sand and didn't realize the pandemic was coming. But COVID, it had some major impacts on us. In one way, it was a positive because people were thinking they wanted to get out of the cities. So it did, in the early stages, it brought us our first two buyers where we're just about completed with their houses. They'll be moving in hopefully in a month. But then the whole supply chain, the inflationary pressures that really stemmed from the pandemic have been hard. We haven't been able to maintain our prices because all of our costs went up literally 30% in 2 years from when we were building our model house to our first two customer houses. So we're faced with increased cost pressures, but also with now the Federal Reserve action to fight inflation, raising interest rates, and now mortgage rates are 7+ instead of 3.5. People will eventually, I think, realize that that's actually a fairly average historical mortgage rate, but it's not average when you look at the last 10 years of having these abnormally low interest rates. So the secondary home market kind of got cut out at the knees at the same time we were facing price pressures. So that's been a challenge, but we're addressing it. We've developed a smaller model so that we can offer a less expensive offering into the public. And we're starting to get a significantly increased amount of interest and people coming to see us again. It's always really encouraging when we have open houses and such that people have a very positive response to the project when they get up there. They don't all turn around and put in an offer the next day, but it's generally a very positive experience when you're sharing what you do. And that's actually one of the goals of our project is not just to do this project and sell these houses, but also to put it out as a model. You know, we want to share. It's not your standard business practice of doing something and keeping your moat by not sharing anything with anybody else and keeping your secrets. You know, climate demands that we all share our experiences and our challenges to help the next people do it. Hopefully the next people will do it this way.
And I want to thank you for doing that. That is a big deal. And being on this show to share your vision and what you're doing. Can you talk about the successes you're most proud of?
Well, yeah, and I would talk about those in both of the contexts. I'm really proud of where New York State has gotten to. I joined in 2013, like I said, in the governor's office when we were really revamping the whole system and how utilities worked and how they were incentivized and compensated to get them to start thinking about ways that they could utilize energy efficiency more to satisfy the loads instead of always just building more equipment and building more power plants. So starting then to where we are today has been really a sea change. I used to be, I wouldn't say ridiculed by my team, but they used to joke with me and I was kind of the net zero crazy guy, right? Because I've been a proponent of net zero houses, net zero buildings, for quite some time. And then we thought, you know, we're not going to get there building by building. So we got to start thinking about net zero communities. And then we sort of jokingly, all right, well, maybe we should just have a net zero state. But that's actually what our Climate Act demands now by 2050. So that's really exciting. And we've gotten the whole scoping plan done of how we expect to, or how we can actually achieve these goals. Now we're in the next heavy lift of, okay, going from planning to execution. So that's going to be a challenge, but I think we're up to it. But then also on the other side, I'm just proud that we're building this project. It's been a dream for a long time, and we're making it happen, and we're actually building things. And like I said, in another month, we should have three houses complete there, and hopefully we'll be building some more soon. So it's really exciting to see that come into fruition and to have our buyers really excited about coming up and moving there.
It sounds very exciting. You said that things take more than twice as long as they should. And I want to ask about your vision for the future. I love what you're doing because it's part of my vision of the future as well. But the fact that things take so long makes me really doubt whether we as a race are really going to make it. You said the Earth will survive, but we're not planets, we're people. So we need a lot of work.
We do need a lot of work. So my vision, it's so hard to tell. Like I said earlier, we have the tools. We have the knowledge. And sure, there could be some innovations that could help us take carbon out of the atmosphere more effectively. And there's room for some innovation to accelerate our process. But we do have the tools, and we have places like New York that are setting up to be a model. You know, we're the sixth largest economy in the world, I think, or something close to that. And if we can do it and show the blueprint for how we did it, then lots of other places can as well. And there are a lot of other states that are coming along and talking about 100% clean power grids. I think there's at least 20 states that have passed that already. So I am an optimist by nature. And I think if I were convinced that there was no chance that we were going to survive this, maybe I wouldn't be going at it as hard. But I think that it's about encouraging other people to act. And the other thing that I think is encouraging is the younger generation. I do think younger folks have they're much more attuned to the climate crisis. They understand it. Larger percentages feel that we need to do something dramatic about it. So as they transition into the workforce and then start leading the workforce and hopefully the political world, that's where I see the seeds for optimism. But it's not going to be easy. That's for sure.
You mentioned working as hard at it because you believe it's solvable. I talk about going down with a shovel in my hands, meaning I'm going to still dig a hole in the ocean, even if it's futile. But I like the concept of not only having a shovel in the hand, but working really hard to try to make a difference.
Yeah. And to convince other people to make a difference. And that's really the key, I think. You have to convince people that it's not such a massive problem that their individual actions don't count. It's sort of like voting, right? If I take my vote out of the system of the hundreds of millions that are cast in the country for president, does that matter? Probably not. But everybody needs to vote, so you need to take collective action. And if we all just do the things that we can do, and there are a pretty clear list, you know, drive an electric vehicle, live in an all-electric house, be conscious of your consumption. There are a lot of activities where you can reduce your impact. And if we can convince everybody that it does matter, and that just becomes second nature to people, then that's one path to helping solve this problem.
You mentioned how the pandemic impacted the Catskill Project. How do you think the pandemic impacted climate change?
Well, I think that the price pressures and inflation are universal. So it doesn't matter if we're talking about the insulation or the heat pump in my house or, you know, the equipment or an offshore wind turbine. They have gotten more expensive. So the structures that we had set up pre-pandemic to subsidize and drive the development of all of our renewable energy in New York State and the country, all that just got a lot more expensive. So it's had a detrimental impact across the board in that way. I do think that if you want to look for positives, it has focused people more on the importance of indoor air quality, sensitized people. So that's a good thing, because that's important. You know, we spend 90% of our lives or so indoors. So the health of our indoor environment is really important to our personal health. So I think that's been sort of a silver lining of the pandemic.
You already talked about ways that people could help mitigate climate change. Do you have advice for people about what they can do beyond that?
Just to act. Don't put it off. Don't feel like there's nothing you can do, because there is something you can do. You can pay attention to it. You can lower your personal footprint and also talk to your friends about it and, you know, try to get some collective action that way.
Do you have any questions for me?
I'd be curious if you can point to any insights that you gleaned from your other interviews of positive ways to look at this problem that other people have shared with you.
Well, I really like your answer of act, do something. And many people have talked about doing something. Another common response has been to vote. If you vote, you can get change to happen. If you don't vote, you can't. And you touched on that voting is like climate change, that it's everybody's little actions together that will make the big actions. And of course, people have talked about diet and solar and electric vehicles. And of course, all those things are important to consider. Personally, I think that we really need all arrows in the quiver.
Yes.
So we need all different technologies. We need all people engaged. We need companies engaged. We need governments engaged. We're not going to do this unless we get both critical mass of everybody and everything, but also a sense of urgency that it has to happen now.
Yeah, I think your point about voting is great. If we can show that there's a large preponderance of voting age people and the voting demographics getting younger and younger in this country, then perhaps the other party will see that and say, you know what, maybe we should focus on climate and stop this polarization. Now, I'm not against all Republican ideas by any means. It's just their rejection of climate science that is hard for me to fathom.
Very often, I think that. And that is that if we could just make it not a political topic,
yep,
we could really make a difference. This country could set the pace, an incredible pace for the world to follow.
And it would be a huge economic opportunity in all states, red states or blue states. I think more money from the Inflation Reduction Act is going to red states, right? Because they're the states that host the largest wind farms and solar. So it's great. You know, it benefits everybody. And if everybody could just get behind that, it could really, like you say, give our whole nation an economic boost and help solve the problem.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to say?
I think I've made my points. Everybody get out there and work on it. And it feels good when you're working on something that matters, right? So let's all do it.
Let's all do it. And on that note, I'm going to wrap this up, and I'm going to wrap it up with a wrap. You were at summer camp when you began your evolution. You eventually decided to merge your work life with finding a solution. You wanted to take the skills you developed and somehow manage to do something about the Hurricane Sandy damage. Look, I'm really excited about what you're building, and it's not just flattery. I think it's awesome to go days on solar and a battery. You've got lots of carbon neutral houses for sale, and you're building them on a community scale. You even look at where the carbon comes from with every wall and every nail. Thank you so much, Greg Hell.
That was pretty sharp right there, Lee.
I related very much to Greg's story of how his different life experiences prepared him for the Catskill Project. Like Greg, my path was full of zigs and zags, some not great, but ultimately resulting in where I needed to be, doing what I need to do. I admire the many people I've met who have set out on the direction of their hearts from the onset, but thankfully, I eventually arrived. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at CrivatEnergyInnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. Greg named Superstorm Sandy as the event that most pointed him in his current direction. For me, it was the fires in San Diego. These major weather-driven events were early compared to what is going on today. Each year, we experience new devastation. Hopefully, people won't need to directly experience such losses to get going. As Greg said, act. Don't put it off. Don't feel like there's nothing you can do, because there is something you can do. It feels good to work on something that matters. So let's all do it. Let's all engage and help mitigate climate change.